Hello to our listeners. Welcome to the Women Governance Trailblazers podcast, where we listen to the journeys of trailblazing women in the corporate governance field, their passion, struggles, and commitment to improving how companies and boards function. My name is Courtney Camlett, and my co-host is Liz Dungey.
Hi, everyone.
Liz and I are both super passionate about governance, and we want to spotlight some of the amazing women who share that passion. We're connecting with guests from different paths and industries to hear their perspectives on what surprised them in their career, and where they think the field of corporate governance is going. For this episode, we're very excited to be talking with Dawn Belt, who is a partner in Fenwick's corporate group and co-leads the firm's startup and venture capital practice area. Dawn is a recognized leader in the areas of technology law and corporate governance. She co-authors Fenwick's annual board diversity report, including most recently, Diversifying the Boardroom, which examines recent trends in board diversity and other developments relating to racial and ethnic board diversity. She also co-authors the firm's gender diversity survey. She's a frequent speaker on the topics of corporate governance, securities law, and the importance of women taking more leadership positions at top technology companies. And we are so pleased to be able to talk with her today. Welcome, Dawn.
Thanks for having me. I'm really honored to be here.
We're thrilled to have you. Thanks for taking the time. So, Dawn, a few years ago, it seemed like the push for diversity was coming from every direction. There were several regulatory and investor initiatives that were coming together to create a very noticeable impact on the topic. And now some of the regulations have been challenged in court, and investors seem to be maybe backing off a little bit, or at least being less vocal about ESG in general. So what are you seeing in terms of practices and disclosures on board diversity? And where do you think it'll go in the next 5 years or so?
Great question. I think that the continued demand for diversification at the board level and upper management levels will continue. So despite some challenges in the court and probably a real freezing of any legislation in that area, I think that there's going to be a continued push for this, including on disclosure. I mean, there is just demand on that from management teams, employees, and even institutional investors who maybe aren't going to be quite so vocal, though maybe put a pin in that. There's still going to be a push for this. So I expect that the trend will continue, albeit slowly. The disclosure will continue to improve and just be more widespread. But I don't think there's going to be further legislation. When the first California passed its bills to create a requirement for diversity amongst with women on boards and underrepresented minorities on boards, I think everybody knew that those were going to be up for some constitutional challenge. So I don't think it was necessarily a surprise that it got struck down. I think there was a little bit of a surprise that somebody would actually muster the effort to bring the cases, but they did. And so we are where we are today. That's why I don't think there's going to be a lot more legislation in this front. We've kind of seen how it will play out. I think there's going to still be continued interest in this area. The other thing to pay attention to is some of the states that have taken some action to, or at least threatened action, to say that they're going to revoke licenses from companies that follow these initiatives or won't buy bonds from institutional investors that support ESG. I don't think it's got a ton of traction. You know, it could grow in some geographies, I suppose. I think right now, though, it's just something that companies should be aware of and recognize that that could be a risk. But I don't think that that's going to be something that necessarily stops people from still pursuing ESG initiatives.
And for companies that are maybe at a halfway point right now or somewhere along the journey of going from really no diversity to adding some gender and or racially diverse directors, it seems like despite what might be a little bit of a let up right now, they should probably still continue their efforts on that path because of institutional investor voting policies and proxy advisor policies and things like that. And the NASDAQ rule is still in effect right now. Would you agree?
I'm still seeing boards care about this as they think about succession planning. I don't think that's going to let up. I think there's frustration and feeling like it's hard to get good candidates and whatnot, but this effort is going to continue. I feel very confident of that.
So drilling down your continued diversification comment a little bit, looking beyond the board, what diversity trends are you seeing at the executive and management levels? And does it vary by company and industry?
Yeah, so I mean, we've done these surveys for a number of years that covers both the board and sort of Section 16 level officers at public companies. And the trends are towards continued increased diversity, but very, very slowly. At the board level, it has actually kind of taken a step function, I think, in light of the recent activity, both the legislation and institutional investor guidelines. So I think that that's helped. And maybe what we are on, like a little bit of a jump and a continued slow slope upward, is probably what I would predict if forced to do so. I think that in terms of correlation with industry, hard to say exactly. To me, there would be a natural correlation between industries which maybe just have a lot of people who are diverse, just in terms of a pipeline issue, right? You have more people who are rank and file employees from which you could then create a level of managers and management executives. Those are people who grow into board roles, right? And so in certain industries where there may be just more diverse people, we may see that. I haven't done any particular research in that area, but that just feels intuitive to me. Similar on geography, actually. Like if you take an example of California, and we have a higher percentage of Asian Americans here, right? You're just going to see more Asian people in management and then eventually more on boards than maybe compared to other geographies where there simply aren't that many people of Asian descent, even in the employee ranks. Or African Americans in the South, for example, a larger percentage there than compared to the West Coast. So I think there's likely a correlation on geography. Company size is an interesting one. Like we do a survey that looks at the 150 largest Silicon Valley-based companies and compare that to the S&P 100. Obviously, the top few companies in the SV 150 are pretty large, but then it drops off quite quickly to companies that would be nowhere close to the S&P 100 size, right? But yet you see similar trends in diversity amongst this group. So maybe size doesn't have a huge correlation, though, of course, on the size, you'll just see more developed programs, right? More leadership programs that help bring employees up through the ranks into management areas. You also see just more robust disclosure because they have processes and systems to do that. So I think size has a correlation there, perhaps, but it seems like still over all of these measures, there's a push in this direction, some companies moving faster than others. I'd be really curious if there are some more academic studies on how closely tied some of these factors are.
Yeah, we need a regression analysis.
Yeah, right.
As an economics major, so we'll get right on that. and that's interesting, too, about your comments on size. And yeah, it seems like it would be affected by culture too, regardless of company size. That's a good perspective.
I think that's right. I mean, I was thinking about this and whether, for example, is there a perception that large companies are safer than smaller companies in terms of job security or opportunity? And if that's the case, is there correlation with women or underrepresented minorities wanting a sort of safer place to go? Don't know, really. I mean, that could be the case or it could not be the case. And it isn't necessarily even the case that the initial assumption of a big company being a safer place to work is necessarily true. I mean, you obviously have seen in the news recently, very large companies laying off folks. Also, if companies are not growing, there may be fewer opportunities for people to really advance their careers. And instead, it becomes a place where you can stagnate more. Yeah, we should get some graduate students to do some work on this. I think it'd be very interesting.
It would be very interesting because you would think that the larger companies have more revenue that they could put towards programs to increase diversity, to implement policies and just more bandwidth, but it's not always the case.
And I always look forward to that SB 150 survey. So everybody who's listening, make sure to check that out every year when it comes out. Don, what common traits do you see among the women who have made it towards the top and who are successfully leading Silicon Valley companies today?
Yeah, when I was thinking about this question, and frankly, I think it's the same traits that make men successful at Silicon Valley companies, right? I mean, it's strong intellect, work ethic, leadership, vision, empathy. I think all of these are important traits, and I think men and women both share them when they reach these levels of success. Perceptions, of course, may be different both from the individual and from outside parties, but and of course, every individual is different. So I think it's hard to generalize in this. One thing I was thinking is that I'd expect most successful women leaders don't actually spend a lot of time thinking about how they're different from their male counterparts, mm-hmm. and instead are spending most of their time thinking about how to make their companies and organizations successful. And it may be that focus that's really the most important thing. One thing that did come to mind as I was thinking about this question was, I think it's unfortunate that a lot of times more junior women think about this a lot. Hmm. And that may become actually a distraction from their being successful, instead of sort of focusing on the things that just will help develop their own careers and abilities and help their organizations, may get caught up in a worrying too much about what other people think.
Yeah,
right? And
overthinking it.
Sort of, yeah, and then taking themselves kind of out of the running in this very long marathon that it takes to become a leader of these companies.
Yeah, you hear that more associated with women than men in terms of thinking.
Yeah, that's right. That, like, kind of overthinking it and taking themselves out of the running, when you don't need to do that. You know, you've got all the same base qualities and abilities, and, you know, go out there and kill it.
There is a great book by Shelley Archambault, Unapologetically Ambitious. She was on a board where I served as assistant corporate secretary years ago. And I just always think about that and her talking about imposter syndrome.
Yeah. I've had the pleasure of meeting Shelley. She's very impressive.
So you mentioned risk earlier. What do you see as the most important governance risks that tech companies are facing right now? And how do you recommend they approach those issues?
So I think that there are some different company risks that have a governance component to them that are particularly salient right now. One of it, which of course is AI, right? That's all that anyone is talking about in 2023, it seems. And it's still in its early days, but how will it affect companies? You know, ethical issues around that are, I think, at the forefront of everyone's minds. And there's certainly a huge governance component of that. Really understanding how that's being deployed at any particular company and what's happening in the world overall, in a particular industry, what competitive advantage it might bring or disadvantage it might bring, right? And thinking through all of that, I think, is going to be really important in the coming months and years. AI in particular, too, because Europe's a little ahead of us on the legislation around that. I think staying ahead of what we think might be coming, just like it happened with privacy, I think it's going to happen with AI. Whatever companies can do to be prepared on that, I think will be helpful in the long run. The other risk that I see is a long-term workforce management risk, perhaps, that may be particularly impactful in tech companies. And specifically, I've been thinking about how the demand for engineering talent seems to be outpacing the number of people who are entering the field and have passionate for the field and are staying in the field. I think I've been hearing more and more stories of people who have pursued engineering in their like early parts of their career, perhaps because they just felt they should, or the parents told them to, or whatever it might be. And it ends up that they don't actually like it.
Yeah.
And so how do we make sure that there's enough people who have these skills that I think lots of companies are going to need and the world will need, and are really dedicated to doing this for a long-term career? That may be a particular point of risk for tech companies, right? Which are always looking for this talent. People who are really good at it, not just that have an engineering degree, but are quite skilled in the area and want to dedicate their careers towards it. Figuring out how to plan for that, I think, is going to be an important long-term focus. And then, of course, cybersecurity, which has been on everyone's mind for a number of years, I think that will continue. It's just amazing how many bad actors there are out there in this area, and it's just a constant battle. And so I think we will continue to see that, and that as a governance risk that tech companies have to focus on, it's constant. So I think that's an important one. In terms of how to approach these issues, think, like I mentioned earlier, making sure the management teams and boards are really staying informed on these trends, how they might affect the organization in particular, how their company's long-term strategy really deals with these risks, anticipates them and solves for them. At the same time, also not oversteering on any of these, right? Taking a particular example of lots of boards looking for cybersecurity expertise, and you certainly want that on your board, but you might not want on your board the person whose only expertise is cybersecurity and isn't able to really think about all of the other aspects of running a company that are really important. So you need to pay attention to this, but perhaps not oversteer in that direction. And you take that board example and sort of, you know, apply it through the whole organization. How do we make sure we're dealing with and addressing these risks without ignoring the overall goal of running a successful business?
That's a great example.
Right. And some of the risks and opportunities you mentioned are evolving so quickly, too, that it can end up backfiring and putting you even further behind the eight ball if you oversteer in a certain direction and then, oops, you went the wrong way and something else unpredictable happened. So that's a really good point. The last question that we have here, you may have similar thoughts and perspectives to one that we discussed earlier, but it's one that we ask all of our guests on the program. So what do you think women in the corporate governance field can add to the current conversation on the role of corporations in society?
I just love this question, actually, in terms of what a corporation means in society. And I know people have strong views about that and often very narrow views in my mind. But I think it's corporations are actually so important in developing a robust society that provides opportunity to so many people, but that has to be a very holistic one in my mind. So in any case, I think diversity of viewpoints is very important in that mission. You know, the American business world is changing. It's becoming more and more diverse. The world is changing quickly, becoming more and more global. So I think leaders really need to be equipped to address that. And women and underrepresented minorities are really bring a lived experience that's helpful in that regard. And that experience, I think in many cases, may also help develop certain traits. So although I said before that I think men and women do share very similar traits in successfully leading companies, there certainly may be situations where there's a little bit of weight in one direction or another on certain traits or abilities or tendencies, I suppose. And I think, you know, relationship building, EQ, certain risk-taking behavior or collective action behavior, you know, I think women may have certain experiences in those veins that influences how they think about those issues, right? And how they process issues. When they come across them in the companies, thinking about how they bring their experiences to the table may be different. And I think that can really enrich the discussion about how to run a successful corporation in your society. So it's, you know, obviously you want a return for your shareholders, but you also can take so much pride in creating an organization that provides so much opportunity for everybody else involved, whether it be your employees and your customers and all people along your supply chain. I think there's such a role to be an active and impactful participant in your society through your corporation. Mm-hmm. And I hope people continue to embrace that.
Me too. That was part of our thinking when we first came up with this question, which now we've been asking for, 4 years, Courtney, and getting lots of different responses. But I totally agree, Don, that corporations do serve such a valuable role, and to have leaders who have lived different experiences and are able to bring that broader perspective can be, you know, whatever their backgrounds might be that have afforded them those different experiences, that can be really valuable for the leaders to have.
Yeah, we definitely need diversity, and we need for it to increase, just to give different perspectives and experiences.
I think that's right. And the good news is that I think that is coming. It has been coming. It will continue to come. It may come more slowly than a lot of people would like, but I am optimistic that we're going to get there.
Well, thank you for sharing your optimism with us, Don, and for talking with us today. And thanks to all of our listeners as well for joining us for this episode of Women Governance Trailblazers. Please subscribe on whatever platform you use for podcasts, and we would love if you would rate us while you're there.
Thanks, Dawn.
Thanks so much.